This episode is brought to you by Bank of America. With an ever-changing business environment, navigating the current landscape can be hard for business owners. This Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month and beyond, we aim to share resources with business owners so they can chart their success. According to Bank of America's Women and Minority Business Owner Spotlight, 62% of AAPI business owners expect their revenue to increase this year. Bank of America gives you access to business specialists, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Bank of America is committed to empowering all entrepreneurs with resources, expertise, and guidance. Head to bankofamerica.com/AAPI-business for more details. That's bankofamerica.com/AAPI-business. Hi, everyone. I'm Hillary Kerr, the co-founder and chief content officer of Who What Wear, and this is Second Life, a podcast spotlighting women who have truly inspiring careers. We're talking about their work journeys, what they've learned from the process of setting aside their doubts or fears, and what happens when they embark on their second life. Today, I'm joined by the founder and CEO of Baked by Melissa, Melissa Banashai. Back in 2008, Melissa began selling cupcakes out of her New York City apartment, hand-delivering them all over town. Today, she's grown that business into a certified sensation with 14 retail locations in New York, one in Boston, and a massive e-com business shipping treats nationwide for every gifting occasion. Baked by Melissa is known for bite-sized cupcakes in specialty flavors like tie-dye and cookie dough, and has sold over 250 million to date. As of late, Melissa has also become known for another reason when her salad content on TikTok went completely viral. Whether she's slinging cupcakes or Green Goddess salads, Melissa is known to share some seriously tasty treats with the world. But back before she was leading a multi-million dollar company, and even before she was baking out of her New York City apartment professionally, she was actually working in advertising as an assistant media buyer. When she was unexpectedly fired from that job, she was devastated. But it also set her on what one can only describe as quite the fortuitous path. Now, on Second Life, it's Melissa Banashai. All right, Melissa, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, so on this podcast, we like to start at the beginning. What did you study in school? And much more importantly, what did you think you were going to be when you grew up?
I went to Syracuse University. I studied child and family studies. I didn't know what I wanted to study, and that was the school I got into at Syracuse. I knew I wanted to go to Syracuse because that's where my brother went. And I had no idea what I wanted to be when I grew up, except for happy.
Aw. So, child and family studies, yet your first job out of school was at an ad agency. I could make a joke about how that was probably actually, at least the child piece of it, directly applicable in some ways. But I'm curious about how you made that leap and specifically what drew you to the wonderful world of advertising.
When I was in college, I enjoyed myself. I learned quickly that my GPA might not matter when I graduated. Like, am I going to put my GPA on a resume? I don't know. First marking period, freshman year, I got like all A's and like two B pluses. And I tried really hard and it was great. And then I guess I had a realization at one point, like, screw this. So for 3.5 years, I had fun and I went to the classes I had to go to get the grades, but there were many that you didn't have to go to. And I just relaxed and had fun and didn't really have a care in the world, quite honestly. When it came time to figuring out what I wanted to do after college, I wanted to live in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Bergen County, New Jersey. Manhattan is my city. And I remember looking at people walking up and down the streets when we would go in for dinner with my parents. I wanted to be able to walk in the street of Manhattan and know where I was going. And so I needed a job to be able to achieve that goal. Advertising definitely sounded cool. And I thought by getting as many interviews as I could, wherever I could, it would be a good opportunity to walk into an office and see what it's like. And so I did that. And I accepted one of the first job offers I got. And I was a sales assistant for a media company, which was like the worst job ever. It was like the office, like boring. And it was like data entry. The sales guys would come back from lunch drunk. So 7 months into that job, I actually wound up getting the job in advertising that I was then fired from.
So talk to me a little bit about that world, because the advertising world, there's so many different aspects to the industry. There's so many different responsibilities. What side were you working on?
So I had a very close friend from college who was working at Deutsche Advertising as a media planner, an assistant media planner. And we were friends. We hung out and she said, oh, Deutsche is awesome. The environment is cool. The people are cool. When there's a job opening, I'll let you know. And then there was one. And it was for an assistant media planner on the Tylenol account. And I got the job and I started working there. And the environment was cool. The people were cool. But the work itself was not for me. I wasn't passionate about it. And quite honestly, I didn't know how to be good at it. You have to want to succeed. You have to ask questions. You have to be passionate. And at the time, all I wanted was to find a job I was passionate about that I felt fulfilled from at the end of each day. That job wasn't it. And like a year and a half after I started, I was fired. So
I really believe that some of the skills that you learn, whether it's through internships or some of those entry-level jobs, that those skills, you don't know that they're important at the time, or at least I didn't know that they were important at the time, but they're actually like quite foundational and helpful, and you can continue to use them in a variety of ways as your career progresses. I'm wondering if you were learning anything in those formative years, whether it was something good or what not to do, that you have taken with you as you've moved ahead in life.
I learned a lot in those first years of my career, and it took time to really get the learnings, because I just remember going to my supervisor. She wanted me to like draft an email to the client and then she would correct it. And I remember saying, like, why don't you just send the email yourself? Like, it probably came across as very rude, but I didn't mean it that way. And so what I learned from that experience is what not to do. Like, I felt it was unjust that I was fired at the time of being fired, but in hindsight, it wasn't. And I think I didn't want to be successful there. They had met with me a couple of times and told me that I wasn't doing my job, but it didn't click. It didn't register. I didn't understand what I needed to do. I was never meant to be successful in that role. And that experience was one of the greatest learnings of my entire career. And I think back to those days all the time.
So tell me about that moment, though, when you were let go. Were you surprised? Did it have a big impact on you? Did you feel like whatever about it? Where was your head?
So I was surprised. It was a Wednesday at like 10 a.m. And at Deutsche, they have like a loudspeaker. And they called me to HR over the loudspeaker. I thought I was getting a promotion. And they fired me. And the reason that they cited for firing me was just bullshit. Like, it wasn't true. It was like, Melissa leaves early. And I never left before 5 p.m. So I felt that it was very unjust. And the truth is, they needed a reason to fire me. And that's okay. I went to my brother's office crying. He had just moved into his very first office in Manhattan. And he's an entrepreneur. And he told me, don't worry, it's the best thing that ever happened to you. The great big brother that he is. He didn't even like hesitate. And he said, I got it. Go home, bake your cupcakes. We'll start a business together. And that wasn't crazy, because at the time I was already known for baking my tie-dye cupcakes. And our goal in life was to like start a business together. That's what we did. The family vacations. We would like hang out on the beach, try to think of new business ideas. I mean, so I went home and baked 4 batches of cupcakes.
What flavor were you thinking about it in terms of business? And I'm curious about just sort of where your head was about, okay, like I'm going to go and make a move and this is going to be my next thing? Or was it just like, I'm self-soothing and I'm going to bake a bunch of these cupcakes just to give myself something to do? What was the context of all of that?
So I'm one of those people who is always doing something. Mm. If I'm sitting, I'm just like, what am I supposed to do? So it was great. Like I left the office. I walked to the Food Emporium in Murray Hill right near my apartment, like trolling the aisles. Brian told me to make, you can't start a business with one flavor because I was making my tie-dye cupcakes. He said, come up with other flavors. So I was like, ooh, I love candy. And at the time, crumbs was like all the rage.
Oh, yeah.
And they had the big muffin-sized cupcakes. And for some reason, like I always thought they were stuffed, but they were never stuffed. There was never something inside. I was like, I'm going to make stuffed cupcakes. And I decided on s'mores, yum. Peanut butter cup, yum. Cookie dough. And then, of course, tie-dye. And so I went home and I baked these cupcakes, like big, normal size, I guess, cupcakes.
Yeah.
I did it first and foremost to keep my mind occupied because I am accountable for my own happiness. Mm. And I think it would be much easier to go home and just feel sorry for myself. But by keeping myself busy and doing something that makes me happy, it was the first step in getting over that really shitty thing that happened, being fired. And yes, Brian said, let's start a business. He's my big brother, my best friend. It's what we always wanted to do. Yes, let's do it. Did I think it was going to happen? No freaking way I didn't. But anyway, my best friend's little sister was staying with me for the summer and interning at Allison Broad PR.
Aww.
And Allison was like a celebrity to me at the time. I think she was on like an episode of The City.
Yep.
You know, a woman who started her own business. So Carly was staying with me and I said, Carly, bring these cupcakes into work with you and you'll make friends because all girls love cupcakes. And like in the back of my mind, my goal was for Allison to see the cupcakes. She brought the cupcakes into work the next morning. She's like texting me off the hook. Oh my God, everyone's obsessed with your cupcakes. Allison ate two. Like she wants to put you in touch with her caterer. Allison sent me an email. I still have it to this day. And it's like, you should call them peace cakes. Because I like put peace signs on some of them.
Yeah.
And Allison asked Carly if she could give my information to her caterer who was at the office at the time. And I said, oh my God, of course. So the day after I'm fired from my job, I get a call from Allison Broad's caterer. Ben asked me to come for a tasting. And that was just freaking incredible, right? Like, what a pick-me-up and what a good lesson. Do what makes you happy. Like, focus on your happiness first and, like, follow your heart. And that's what I was doing. So I hung up the phone with Ben. We decided on when I was going to go there for a tasting. And then I run back to my brother's office. And I get in there and I'm like, oh, my God. I just got a tasting with Allison Broad's caterer. Let's go in there. Like, we have a business already and he could be a part of it. And they were like, great. Like, so we need a name and a logo. I really wanted the company to be called Baked, like a natural extension of myself at the time. Mm-hmm. And my brother insisted that I have a personal tie. He said, you wouldn't know who Allison Broad was if her name wasn't in the name of her company. So we settled on Baked by Melissa, which perfect, great. And my brother's business partner at the time, Matt, who was our childhood best friend, he turns around his monitor. He says, what do you think of this as the logo? And it's the logo we have today. I cried. It was beautiful. If I was a logo, that would be me. This cute little tie-dye cupcake with like fun little font under it. It's perfect. So I stopped at the Clover Deli that was across the street from my apartment at the time. I used to go there every day on my way home from work and buy at least one or two cupcakes. So I walk in there from being at Brian and Matt's office and going through that whole like logo conversation. And they're like, what can we get for you today, Melissa? It's like, can I just have some flat pastry boxes? So they gave me some flat pastry boxes, you know, those white boxes. Yeah. We printed out the logo. I pasted on the boxes. I baked the cupcakes for the tasting for Allison's caterer. And I went with my little cupcakes and it looked so legit. Baked by Melissa. I made them mini for the tasting. No paper. They looked aesthetically like the same way they look today. Maybe like a little more amateur because they were. But
yeah.
I made them by hand. I mean, I still make everything by hand, but like I didn't have the techniques anyway. And I remember Ben taking a bite of each of these cupcakes when I went there for the tasting. And he was like, oh my God, from a catering perspective, people go crazy over things that are just a bite. If you could figure out how to make them just a bite, oh my God. End quote. That's what he said. And I said to myself, like, this is it. This is my chance to do what I love. And I left his apartment And I figured out how to make them just the bite. It was a very temporary solution. It was like real backbreaking work. But I went home, I baked them bite size, brought them back to Ben. He said, these are amazing. I'm doing an event at the Havaianas showroom in Soho on Spring Street in 2 weeks, like the flip-flops.
Yeah.
One of Allison's clients at the time. Bake me 250 cupcakes. Wear all black. Okay, bye. Like, that's it.
Had you thought through pricing or margins?
Nope. We came up with pricing. But what we also did before that first event is my brother and Matt had started an agency, basically, an interactive agency. They were building websites for people. So they built a Baked by Melissa website, bakedbymelissa.com. We shot all these images of the cupcakes on my IKEA coffee table with like a white bed sheet in between, using a Canon point and shoot digital camera. Remember those?
Oh, yeah.
So you go to bakedbymelissa.com, you see this beautiful rotating slideshow of our product. And then using PayPal, you could actually order 100 cupcakes that I would bake out of my apartment and deliver using the subway anywhere in Manhattan. I used to have to match up the order and the payment to make sure it was a legit order. And then it was only for 100 cupcakes. We ordered these white pizza boxes and we put a Baked by Melissa sticker on top. So for that first event, we had the website working and we ordered business cards that had my name, my cell phone number, my home address. But instead of saying apartment 27G, it was suite 27G. And we had a stack of these business cards in front of the bite-sized cupcakes for this first event. It looked so legit. And I'll never forget the reaction of people. Ben got this like acrylic jewelry box that we displayed the cupcakes in. And I was standing behind the cupcakes with my business cards in front of them at this event. And people are like, oh my God, they're so cute. Oh my God. Oh my God. Like freaking out over these bite-sized cupcakes because like bite-sized cupcakes didn't exist.
Right.
And I'm like, oh my God, like I bake cupcakes now. And I kept doing events with Ben. I would go on tastings and cold call catering companies that didn't do dessert. And anybody's name and number I got, I would call my brother, help me come up with a script. Like, hi, this is Melissa from Baked by Melissa. I'd like to bring you a free tasting of my cupcakes while I was sitting on the corner of my bed in my bedroom that had a fake wall, you know? Like, and I would have never been able to do anything I'm telling you without Brian and Matt and Ben, my co-founders. And there's like a fifth co-founder too. And together, we founded Baked by Melissa. Together. It was my brother's vision. I was the product and the face. And I baked every cupcake. And I just like did whatever he said. Because how cool would it be? And I never in my wildest dreams could have anticipated being the CEO of a multi-million dollar company. Like, it's what the hell? Like, it's crazy.
So I'm curious about some of the logistics around this. Like, were there any initial hoops that you had to jump through for having a food business? Because, you know, like having a home kitchen, I'm sure like not in the beginning, but those are things that you have to consider as you grow and as time goes on. What was that process like?
It's easier to ask for forgiveness than
permission.
Yeah. Like I could never do what we did then now because I know too much. You have to be a complete moron to do what we did for so many reasons. There was no business plan. Now we have a 35,000 square foot bakery and we had never done that before either, but we knew what we needed and everything's made entirely by hand. And without the crazy lady today named Melissa, who cares so much about the quality of the product, who goes in there, makes sure they're stuffing every cupcake perfectly. The icing is symmetrical. The topping is the right amount. Without that, it's so easy to lose the quality. And at the beginning, it was, I mean, the first hoop was baking 500 cupcakes in a day for me was back-breaking work. I was doing it out of my apartment, like through that summer. I was fired June 28th, I think. And then I was going on all these tastings and Ben had sent me on a tasting to Cafe Barry one day. I like walk in there. It's like on Spring Street in Soho. Everyone looked so fancy and beautiful. And I was very intimidated. I walk in there with my Syracuse sweatpants, like batter all over me. And this handsome Danny Omari, who was the founder of Cafe Barry or his like family business, he walks downstairs and I like introduce myself. I give him a tie-dye cupcake. He eats it. He says, wow, I love you. I'm storing you in my phone as Cupcake. We'll be in touch. And he called me a few weeks later. He said, hey, Cupcake, it's Danny from Cafe Barry. I have an idea. Let me know what you think. I have this extra space in my basement kitchen downstairs. Mm-hmm. I would love for you to come do your baking here. I do a holiday market every holiday season in the Union Square Holiday Market. It's a 6-week period of time. I usually sell hot cocoa and soup, but I think your cupcakes would make a killing. You move into my kitchen. You could bake here for free. Sell me your product at cost. I will brand the booth Bake by Melissa and we'll see what happens. And so that was another like, this is amazing, but I'm very overwhelmed. And so my brother and I went and we checked out the basement. And I remember leaving after looking at everything, like crying, waiting for the subway because I was just so overwhelmed and I was so excited, but I was so scared. And I'm just like, I'm like not sad, but I'm just like, I don't even like what. But yeah, we wound up on November 27th. My dad drove into the city. He helped me move all of my baking supplies into the basement of Cafe Barry. We hired our first employee who would bake with me. And the two of us baked like 13 hours a day, 7 days a week for the duration of the holiday market. We would bake and bake and bake. And they would come and take our cupcakes and sell them. We wound up selling out every single day and opening in the Columbus Circle and Bryant Park Holiday Markets in that 6-week period of time.
What?
It was the five of us together, like no money, but like human capital, each one with this unique skill set and experience that the others didn't have. That was the magic of founding Bake by Melissa. So Danny became our fifth and final co-founder. And then fate would have it, there is this little tiny pickup window attached to Cafe Barry that they used to sell smoothies out of sometimes, but it was just closed. It was just this pickup window that they didn't use. And Danny said, oh, you know what? We can make that the first Bake by Melissa store, but they're trying to sell the building. So I don't know how long you could have it. So instead of paying him rent, we gave him a small piece of equity in Bake by Melissa. And what he thought would be month to month, who knows how long we'd have it, turned out to be 5 years. And it's like the highest foot traffic corner in the world. It was incredible.
I mean, this is the wildest story, truly.
It's wild. And so the holiday markets end December 31st or January 1st, I don't remember, but the end of the holiday season. We took a break. We needed to figure it out. We wanted to make sure we did it right. We like got an awning and Matt designed the window decal that had the menu. And I baked a lot of cupcakes. I kept doing the deliveries and all this stuff. And then on March 5th, 2009 was opening day of Baked by Melissa's first retail hole-in-the-wall pickup window. But the way Cafe Barry was laid out is that you had this little pickup window and then there was like a door. And then you're in the cafe and the bar of the cafe is right there. So opening day, I'm sitting at the bar. I had baked enough cupcakes. We hired somebody who was going to work the booth. I'm so overwhelmed. 24 years old. Like, who the hell is going to stop at this hole in the wall and buy cupcakes that they've never heard of? And David Z was sitting next to me. And I don't know if you remember, but David Z is like the chain of shoe stores.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't know him at the time, but he was a regular Cafe Barry because his office was right across the street. And he also had a store right across the street. And David looks at me and then he looks at the bartender who I had never met before. And he says, Adi, who is this beautiful girl, to the bartender of Cafe Barry. And the bartender looks me up and down. He says, she's going to be my wife. And I was like, who is this idiot? But that's how I met my husband. So I met my husband the day we opened Baked by Melissa.
Oh my
like,
God.
You can't make this shit up. It's crazy. I thought at the time he was like a douche, but we fell in love very quickly.
I mean, if this was a movie, I would not believe it.
And then also Ben kept sending me to the Daily Candy office. Daily Aww. Candy was also right across the street from Cafe Barry on Broadway. I must have been there like, and they would get cupcakes for events while I was just doing deliveries before we opened the booth. And I kept bringing them. I don't even think they paid. We wanted Daily Candy to know about Baked by Melissa. And they wound up writing about us in their weekend guide the day before we opened. I could like cry because it's just crazy. It was crazy. And opening day, I'm like freaking out. No one's going to come. There was like a line around the corner of people like lined up to get these bite-sized cupcakes. And my parents were there. Like my dad's running cupcakes up the stairs. We're like peeking our head out of the window like, what the hell is happening? You know, it was just crazy. And that's how it was for a very long time.
I mean, just for anyone who's listening who isn't familiar with Daily Candy, I cannot express enough the power of that newsletter. It had the power to sell you out of cupcakes, to like change the trajectory. It was everything to everyone.
Yeah.
So the fact that they wrote about you on that opening day, I mean, that's just wild. Where do you go from there? Like, it's all up and running. It's all happened so quickly. You are a child, I will point out.
A child who loves to be busy. I mean, we couldn't bake fast enough. I hired and trained three other people over 2 years. My brother actually hired the delivery person with Matt, and he was like, you're going to love him. And I'm like, oh my God, this guy, he was like, his name is Alex. He was running around the city delivering cupcakes. He wound up getting a really not good Baked by Melissa tattoo at one point. Like, I hired my husband, who was not my husband, because he knew how to ice cupcakes. And like, you either know how to ice cupcakes or you don't. The two of us fell in love icing cupcakes. We iced every cupcake we sold for 2 years in that basement. The delivery business was growing. The pickup business was growing. We wound up opening our second retail location in January 2010, which was a little less than a year after we opened the pickup window. And that was our Union Square location on 14th Street. Florence Fabricant came to the opening and wrote about us in the New York Times. Like, man, just my legs were numb because we didn't have heat when we opened, and it was like 20 degrees, and it was a concrete floor, and it was so cold. And it was my birthday the day after. And I remember all these people wrote on my Facebook wall, and I was like crying, like, these people don't even know why. They're just doing it because of Baked by Melissa. It's like all very overwhelming, because the year before, nobody knew who I was.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just like good lessons. Then in April of 2010, we started shipping nationwide because that's what our customers wanted. They also wanted us to be kosher, so we got kosher certified. Then we opened our third store in November, then our fourth store in April, and we were opening stores and we were growing our e-com business. And yeah, we did that for a while.
How did you know when to do the next thing? Like, you're seeing this level of interest, so you have to keep going. You're selling out, so you have to keep going. But it can be really hard to figure out that scaling perspective, and especially to be so young and to not have experience in this world. And I'm curious about how you would think through, like, okay, now's the time, or like, this is the threshold, we need to hire more people. And by the way, how are you at hiring? Because I feel like that's the hardest part of any job.
I hire for an attitude. I think you could train everything. And now, obviously, I hire for experience. But I've got to say, women tend to like not have confidence in themselves, and men have too much confidence in themselves. So I'm a woman, just to be very clear. I have earned my confidence over the last 15 years. I only got my wings like 3 years ago. I was forced into it when I became CEO in December 2019. My brother was the CEO for the first 8 years. It was him. He did it. So we opened retail. We focused on e-com. And then we moved our baking to one bakery that is not Cafe Barry that we still have today. It went from being 10,000 square feet to 35,000 square feet. We have a separate gluten-free bakery that we do our baking out of, macarons and gluten-free. And then we bake the rest of our product and ship everything out of the bigger area. And that is very important. We're vertically integrated. We have complete control over our product and the quality of our product. That sets us apart from so many other businesses, especially when you find yourself in a global pandemic. But in 2016, my brother was basically like, he's an entrepreneur. He needed to go on and create. He wasn't happy or fulfilled running the business. So we wound up finding another CEO to replace him, who wound up being my partner. I mean, I was doing it with my brother. So there are like pros and cons to that, obviously, you can imagine. But the trust, though, is like great. So like the idea of hiring a new CEO was daunting for so many reasons, and getting to know somebody and creating that relationship of trust and blah, blah, blah. He really exceeded my expectations. He brought me back to life as an individual. He empowered me. He told me that I could be I could do whatever. And like, obviously, like I was in this very high level role, but I was like really product and the brand and retail for years, just running retail and hiring all the people and managing all the teams. And he did some great things for the organization. He was my very close friend and business partner, and he wouldn't make a decision without me. And so together we ran the business, and he taught me so much. But one of the greatest things he taught me was that being a CEO is not rocket science at all, actually. And there are many different kinds of CEOs. He was like a teacher first, and he empowered the team, and he helped like build the team and rebuild it in certain ways. And then in December, on December 5th, 2019, something happened that was entirely personal to him, but he could no longer be our CEO. And it was very out of the blue. And I went to my investor's office, who is also a very close friend, and talked to him more than I talked to anybody else. And I told him, like, don't worry, it's going to be okay. And like, the truth is, it was going to be okay because I was doing so much of what I do today. I was like, don't stress. Like, it sounds worse than it is. It's going to be fine. And that night we had an emergency board call at 6 p.m. and they were like, Melissa's going to be CEO. So that's like another moment where I get very emotional because I never wanted to be CEO of Baked by Melissa. I didn't think I could. I didn't think that I was capable of it. So I remember mouthing to my husband, like, they just baby CEO. Like, fuck. And then I'm up all night with my investor and attorneys and like coming up with what we're going to tell everybody. I listened to Rocky on my way to the subway. I had my whole like spiel for my team. It was December 5th, our busiest time of year. Like, we must perform. That is what makes or breaks us. So I said, like, so-and-so is no longer our CEO, effective immediately. I'll be stepping in as CEO. And they gave me a standing ovation. I couldn't believe it. And I was scared shitless. Like, what does a CEO even do? Like, you know, like
Did your day-to-day change?
Yes, my day-to-day did change. And I think before I became CEO, I needed to train my mind to capture my fleeting thoughts and ideas because that's the initiatives. And like, I needed to train myself to speak up when I disagreed. Like, those gut thoughts and feelings that I had, those are what determines what's next for the business. And I only learned that on January 31st, 2016, when I became a mom. I was like, holy shit, like, I've been having maternal instincts for the past 10 years. Like, it was crazy. I didn't even know that's what those are. And then that was right before we hired our second CEO. So like, in tandem, like, I was getting my wings a little bit and I was learning to speak up more and trusting myself. We spent like almost $100,000 on market research in the summer of 2017 because we had the new CEO. He needed to learn. And you know what they came back to us with? Melissa is the heart of the brand. And whatever Melissa feels is like truly like that. I was like, are you kidding me? On one hand, it was an emotional like experience. I needed to hear it. And on the other hand, we just spent all this money and like, this is coming back to us with. But I needed to hear it. So all these things were happening that were, like, was giving me more and more confidence. And then I led the team through the most successful holiday season, broke all of our records right after dealing with this whole CEO thing that I never thought I would do. But my superpower is I know when I don't know. It's like, am I supposed to have an all hands meeting? I asked some, like, I reached out to the person who I thought would be good at like helping me put together a deck. And to this day, like, when I don't know, I ask. If I don't know the answer, I ask the person that I think will know it. And most of the time, it's like one or two people, you get together, you have a conversation. You know what that is? That's collaboration. And that's what leadership is. And so executing holiday was great. Then 6 weeks after the holiday season, you have Valentine's Day, which is our Super Bowl. And we broke all the records we broke for holiday during Valentine's Day. And then COVID.
I mean, thank God you had your e-com business, I would imagine, because I think what was so hard for so many folks, it's like there are all of these industries and all of these businesses that were affected so tremendously. Everyone had to pivot. There's so much going on. But then there were others that were in better shape because they had diversified revenue, because they had diversified strategy, which had been such a key part of the way that you work. But what were those initial months like? What were you thinking about? How were you figuring things out?
So we started to see the impact of COVID right after Valentine's Day. Traffic to our stores was down. E-com was down. The news was like, people are stocking up on toilet paper. I remember March 5th, maybe, getting my team in the room. I'm like, nobody is celebrating. Like, we need to change our messaging. We need to connect with our customers. Stock up on cupcakes. You can't celebrate in person. Send cupcakes. Like, yeah. It's that simple. And so it was really bad. We were running numbers to see how long we could stay in business.
Yeah.
So we decided to shut down our stores to keep people safe because at our core, safety and just humanity is our top priority always. And we never closed the bakery and we kept on baking and we changed our marketing messaging and it worked. So we went from modeling out how long we would be able to stay in business, which, by the way, I would drive the FedEx truck if I have to. Like, I would stop at nothing. This is my everything. Again, like, I need to know that I did everything I possibly could to keep this thing alive. And so we did layoffs for our retail employees. We wound up having to get our bakery people back because like we cut down. So then I was like, how do I get them back? Nobody wants to come to work. We ordered PPE. We did social distancing. We had the bakery being professionally sanitized 3 days a week, which, by the way, is so freaking expensive.
So.
And they came to work and it was a terrible time. And I never wanted it to happen again, but it was so fun because it leveled the playing field for every CEO. I felt like a fraud. Like I didn't know what to do, but all of a sudden I had the gut and it was mine. And I knew better than anybody out there. This is what we have to do. Like I called my investor. We have to close our stores. He's like, okay, close the stores. Like the trust that he had in me from the day I became CEO, I didn't have in myself. I am forever grateful that he really just let me go. And I remember at one point, we all couldn't believe it. It was just incredible. And we're a different business now than we were before COVID, to say the least.
In what way?
We're a direct-to-consumer gifting company. Mm-hmm. And our website is our flagship. And we have retail too. And there are billboards. And that's how you learn about Baked by Melissa. You walk in, we introduce ourselves, you taste our product. And then we tell you how we are your new go-to gift for literally everything. And we make you happy and we make everybody happy during good times and bad. We got like all these pictures and heartfelt messages during COVID. Like, here's my 98-year-old grandma in the nursing home. It's her birthday. We haven't seen her in a year. And she's smiling for the first time in months. Thank you so much for your cupcakes. It's like, oh my God. You feel so lucky to be able to add like a tiny slice of happiness to people's lives during the scariest, hardest time ever. And it was.
So in addition to changing the business model during COVID, there was also a lot going on social media on a number of levels. And everyone's home and just looking at their phones and trying to figure out what to do. And I remember seeing you eating a super green, super chopped up salad with tortilla chips. And I was like, what is going on here? And I watched it and I watched it and I watched it. I just kept watching your TikTok and I was not the only one. It was going insanely viral, but not for cupcakes, which is so
I know, it's so bizarre.
So talk to me about that aspect of your life and about that experience, because you ended up blowing up on a whole new level in what felt like overnight in a very different category.
Yeah. So I guess I failed to mention the fact that I, for years of Baked by Melissa, like I created every social media post and like my brother would approve it and tell me how to make it better. And like, I love social media. It is just the coolest, greatest, most inspiring place. And it could be a curse too. But if you're creative, wow, what a place. And so Instagram did not exist when we founded Baked by Melissa. And I remember when I first started to use Instagram, feeling like, oh, I should have like really gotten to this sooner. And I was still very early. I don't have many regrets in my life. It's not who I am. But I was like, you know what? The next time a social media platform comes out, I am going to learn it sooner. Mm-hmm. I made that promise to myself. And so with TikTok, we were using it, Baked by Melissa. We were posting videos of the bakery. I had an art director at the time who she would come with me and she would make videos and post it. And, you know, the problem with being part of a business that's always growing is like there's never enough bandwidth. And social media, it took us a really long time to really focus on social media. And so I had an art director who was like doing social, but also doing a million other things. And I would do it sometimes, but I have a million other things to do too. I wasn't happy with TikTok. And I'm like looking at these other accounts. And I'm like, look, like they have this many followers. We should, like, we could be better than this. And the truth is, like, I was the only one who could really do it because I love it. Like, I love photography and scrapbooking. And this is a virtual scrapbook. This is my jam. So I made a Melissa Benishai account. It's like my burner account. And I like learned it. And I love to cook. Like my husband and I, like it's our shared passion. We cook. We like to entertain. He's from Israel. So the Mediterranean vibe is like he changed my life and the way that I eat for the better. So I started posting things and I always make like dessert, like late night snacks. And I would post it from my account and they started going viral. And it just felt wrong to do it from my own personal account when I am the CEO of a business. And even if it doesn't make sense. So I post this like Israeli salad. And of course I understand, like, you got to hook them. So it's like, this salad is the reason I married my husband. This was the first one. It has like 35 million views. I posted it from Baked by Melissa and I was like, holy fucking shit, man. Like, yeah. What is even happening? I'm just like watching it. And so the Green Goddess salad I had made like 2 years earlier because I had all that stuff in my fridge and I made that and that went viral. And leading up to that, I had so many conversations with a lot of people on my team because they're like, oh, you have to post dessert. Like, you have to post the cupcake content. I'm like, okay, here's the deal. On social media, do you agree that your followers in your community, they tell you what they want mm-hmm. based on the engagement? And they said, yes. I said, okay, great. And what is your priority here? Is it having a large audience and building a community that trusts you and comes to you for something, or posting cupcake content, like having a good community and posting and the trust? I said, okay, great. So I'm going to post salads. Okay. And so I just let the people tell me what they want and they like the chopping. And you know what? We're working it into the business. It's really been awesome for our brand and we have so many fun and exciting things coming up. And we're staying true to who we are and we are evolving our brand. And thank God, because that's fun. That's exciting. That's business. I know where we're going. Do I have a exact roadmap? No, but thank God, because that's like the fun part.
Very much so. And also, I feel like when you're good at something and when people like the thing that you do, they are more willing to give you the freedom to try other things. And I mean, you're a really good case of that. It's just, we all contain multitudes. Someone doesn't have to just be the one note. They can have other aspects of their life. And then you ultimately end up feeling more connected to them because they become a more well-rounded brand or human or whatever it is. So it's also just really smart as well.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. It's like I'm a human being and like there's a connection now. They don't even know that I sell cupcakes, but they're figuring it out in the comments. And the truth is, it's our future customer, yeah. TikTok.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about retail too, because you opened your first retail store outside of New York City recently. Talk to me about that. I was shocked because I felt like you were everywhere. And then all of a sudden I was like, I guess maybe it's just like the e-com that's everywhere. But what made you decide to do that and why then?
So when I first became CEO in December, we had been working with my previous CEO. We were going to expand into new markets with retail, and we didn't. That was like a one area of frustration I had. Like, why didn't we? Like, and I kind of felt like, okay, I'm CEO now. Like, we're going to do this. Laser focused on expanding into new markets. But obviously, we had holiday, and then we had Valentine's Day, and then COVID hit. And so when COVID hit, I brought my team together. I said, okay, can we still expand into new markets with retail closed? Is there a test we could do to see if marketing could help us penetrate new markets? And we ran this test in two different cities, one where we had brand awareness already, one where we didn't. And we learned that, yes, we can actually do that. But I do think that retail plays a really important piece to penetrating a new market and like introducing yourself to people, like walk inside, experience Baked by Melissa. So this Boston opportunity kind of presented itself to us, and it was a really good opportunity. So we took it, and it helped us to better understand what opening in a new market at retail could look like.
And what is that?
It could be great. The hardest part is focus, and you can't do everything. You have to prioritize, and you have to choose. And if you try to do too much at once, you fail. So we absolutely see opportunity at retail. And we do plan to expand into new markets. Absolutely. More to come on that.
Okay. I'm excited. So you said something earlier about how we don't always talk about how difficult the CEO stuff is or the entrepreneur stuff, that everyone just talks about the nice stuff and not the difficult stuff. So I am fascinated by and obsessed with talking about the mistakes too, because everyone makes them. Not everyone wants to talk about it, but everyone can learn from that. It makes people feel less alone and I think less afraid. So I'm hoping that you can tell me about a mistake that you've made at any point in your career and what you've learned from it.
As far as like mistakes go, I make mistakes every day. My attitude is very like, every challenge is an opportunity to learn and grow. And when something gets messed up, okay, great. It's a great opportunity as a business to fix and to make something better. And so mistakes are great, truly, like in the business sense, as cliche as that sounds, I love mistakes and I love failure. And I wish more people were comfortable with it, because we'd be so much better for it. If it's like, I made a mistake. Great. Let me coach you through how we learn from it and what the solution is, you know.
And half the time it feels like, at least for me, it's usually just about process. And it's like, okay, the process that we had, it worked until it didn't. And that is now. So now we're going to sit down and we're going to figure out what's not working, how we course correct, how we implement it, and then how we measure that it's going in the right direction. That's all horribly nerdy business framing for it. But ultimately, it's like, it's just problem solving. And frankly, it's sometimes kind of nice to be like, even though there's a catalyst that is usually not great, that is the thing that brings your attention to it. At the end of the day, getting to having the luxury, which it is, like to be able to tweak how things go and make them better, it's ultimately, I find, exciting. And it sounds like you do too.
It's the best. It's process and communication. Those are always where the problems are, or the opportunities. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So a lot of the folks who listen to this podcast are at some stage of their first life, career-wise, they want to make a change of some sort. They're scared. They're not certain that they can do a different thing, whether it's within their industry or in a totally different industry. That decision was made for you in some ways by external forces.
Yes.
But for those folks who are standing there wondering if they could do the next thing, what advice would you give someone who's a little bit nervous about it?
You don't know unless you try. It's like we have everything at our fingertips. You don't like your job? Go on LinkedIn. Look for new jobs. Go on interviews. Hold yourself accountable for yourself. Do it. Like, you know?
I get that. Okay, so my last question is also my favorite question, which is, if you could go back in time and speak with a younger Melissa at any point in your career and give her some advice, what would you say?
You're awesome. I needed to hear that many times and I didn't. And I feel like I've earned my confidence finally. And I still have like a long way to go, but I'm working on myself every single day. And I wish I trusted myself more. I wish I stood up for myself more. I wish I like advocated for myself more. So yeah. And I think everybody probably needs to hear that.
I think you're probably right. Melissa, this was such a pleasure. I have had the good fortune of watching your career from afar since the beginning. And I'm so thrilled that we got a chance to sit down today. So thank you for your time. Thank you for your energy. Thank you for being you.
Thank you. It's an honor to be on your podcast. Thank you so much for having me.
That was the founder and CEO of Baked by Melissa, Melissa Benashai. For more inspiring interviews with women like Melissa, head on over to secondlifepod.com, where we have so many more for you to peruse. If you like today's show, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to rate and review us. We love seeing you spread the word on social, and now you can tag us in your posts. We are at Second Life Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We always want to know who you're interested in hearing from on the show, so send in your requests to hello@secondlifepod.com, or you can DM us on Instagram. I'm at Hillary Kerr. The show is at Second Life Pod. Our DMs are always open. I'm Hillary Kerr, and you've been listening to Second Life. This episode is brought to you by Bank of America. A lot of the guests I speak with on this show are growing a business, whether that's their own or for a company they truly believe in. We know overall business confidence is on the rise, with 60% of AAPI business owners saying they plan to expand their business this year. At Bank of America, small business customers have access to a team of specialists and digital tools that make the process a whole lot easier. As you start, run, or grow a business, turn to dedicated local business specialists for help every step along the way. Or use the digital tools at your own fingertips so you can manage your accounts on your own time. Head to bankofamerica.com/AAPI-business for more details. That's bankofamerica.com/AAPI-business.